Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Tricia Beatty. Today I'll be reading from the June 10th issue of the Christian Science Monitor. In the limited time we have, I'll read from their section called One Week, which is a series of brief articles and commentary about the top stories of the past few days. Arasat, Mondragon, Spain. In this Spanish town, capitalism actually works for the workers. By Erica Page, staff writer. At first glance, this could be any industrial factory. Workers wearing protective gloves assemble control panels and heating plates amid the relentless whirring of machinery. Giant yellow robot arms swing back and forth, lining trays with tiny metal parts. But there is a reason that each year thousands of visitors from every continent come to this mountainous Basque landscape to study factories like this one. This is the home of the Mondragon Corporation, the world's largest federation of worker-owned cooperatives. Copreci, which makes parts for home appliances, is one of the 81 Mondragon cooperatives, ranging from manufacturing to finance and retail. By the end of the day, this floor alone will churn out 30,000 gas valves, destined for stoves worldwide. Yet it is also churning out a radically different vision of capitalism. For young people especially, capitalism brings to mind wealth inequality, cost of living crises, and environmental collapse. More than half the respondents of the Global Edelman Trust Barometer survey from 2022 said that capitalism does more harm than good in the world. The Mondragon Corporation sees itself as a third way, not as an alternative to capitalism, but as an alternative way of doing capitalism, one that can build trust, not widen divisions. The purpose of what we're doing here is not the machinery or the production process, says Amaya Salbide, president of Copreci. Those are tools to reach a higher goal of social transformation. In a traditional capitalist system, decision-making power and wealth are concentrated in the hands of a few top executives and shareholders. In contrast, Mondragon's nearly 70,000 members, ranging from floor workers to top executives, are co-owners of their businesses. They have voting power at general assemblies, where they weigh in on company strategy and policy. The income disparity between the highest and lowest paid employees in Mondragon's cooperatives is capped at a ratio of 6-1, compared with a typical ratio of 344-1 in the United States. It's typically 77-1 in Spain. As the saying around here goes, Mondragon does not create rich people, but rich societies. That means prioritizing quality of life for the employees who live and work in the towns dotting these forested hills, rather than maximizing profit for investors. I think of it as sort of an attractive form of capitalism, says Nick Romeo, author of The Alternative, How to Build a Just Economy. One that works more effectively for more people, but retains some of the benefits of markets and efficiency and competition. Hugo Montalvo knows he could make more money as a sales manager at a regular multinational company. But he wouldn't trade his middle-class status or the small town where he is raising his two children. At the end of a day's work, Mr. Montalvo often finds those on the assembly line picking up their children from the same schools as top managers and gathering at the same tables at local bars. The base pay for a Mondragon worker is on average 40% higher than Spain's minimum wage. Here, no one is rich, says Mr. Montalvo, who works for Escenaro, a Mondragon cooperative in the automotive sector. But no one is poor, either. We are all in that middle range, earning decent salaries. Solidarity permeates the business model. To become a member of the cooperative, a worker invests 17,000 euros, $18,400, normally bit by bit over time. As for company profit, 60% is reinvested in the business, 30% goes to employees as capital, and 10% is for the local community. At year's end, Mondragon reviews each cooperative's earnings, and companies in better financial positions contribute to those that are struggling. Just as we've received in the past, now it's our turn to give, says Mr. Montalvo. In 2013, he was working for Fagor Electrodomestico, a Mondragon cooperative that at the time was Spain's leading home appliance company. When the company folded in the aftermath of the financial crisis, his job and initial investment disappeared. Within 2 weeks, he was transferred to Essenaro. Of the almost 2,000 people who lost their jobs at Fagor, 95% were relocated within the Mondragon network. During the pandemic, workers came to collective agreements to avoid job losses, including salary reductions. The success of the economy can be seen broadly speaking in terms of people's own experiences of prosperity and economic security, says Martin Wolf, author of The Crisis of Democratic Capitalism. Is it rising? Do they expect it to rise for their children? Do they feel they are treated fairly by the people in charge? When the answers are yes, he says, people are much more likely to trust the economic system. Workers here say that without first building trust, the Mondragon experiment would not have survived. Mondragon traces its roots to the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War. In 1941, a young Basque priest named José María Arrazman de Arrieta arrived in the town of Arrasate, Mondragon, amid deep social divisions and a devastated economy. He established a technical school, organized study circles to promote cooperativism, and helped 11 students enroll in long-distance engineering courses. In 1955, five of those students formed the now-defunct Fagor Electrodomestico, the first Mondragon cooperative. Over time, Mondragon expanded its businesses, which today range from a credit cooperative to a well-known supermarket chain. Mondragon University, also a cooperative, enrolls thousands of students. On a recent evening, children played freely in Mondragon's historic square and winding alleys. The bustling town stands in stark contrast to other villages across the north of Spain, once thriving industrial hubs. Between 2008 and 2015, the Basque country's industrial sector lost 64,000 jobs as companies moved their manufacturing abroad and others shut down. The cooperative is a creator of wellness, so it has to exist for decades and decades, says Ander Exeberia, who leads Mondragon's cooperative outreach program. Yet Mondragon, too, walks the tightrope between its people-oriented model and the pressures of global competition. When a group of cooperative workers from San Francisco's Arizmendi Bakery, named after the Basque priest, arrived at Mondragon wearing T-shirts that read, "Fire the Bosses," Mr. Exeberia recalls holding back a smile. For the sake of business efficiency, most operational decisions are made by managers in a standard hierarchical structure. Critics note that Mondragon's international subsidiaries in countries from Mexico to China to Turkey are not cooperatives, despite early efforts to export the model. Even in Spain, not all workers at Mondragon are cooperative members. And Mr. Exeberia acknowledges that Mondragon is not immune to contradictions, adding that the cooperatives tend to be more pragmatic than idealistic. That can cause friction. When you come in from the bottom, you barely have any power at all, says an engineer at the technology research cooperative, Ikerlan, who asked not to share his name. He says Mondragon's business model will need to evolve as global competition grows even tighter. Still, he says, one thing is for sure. This town has life and lungs, thanks to the initiative. Las Vegas. Teacher apprentice programs are growing. Nevada offers a model. By Jackie Valley, staff writer. Where's the best place to look for an aspiring teacher? These days, school leaders are launching talent searches inside their own buildings. In Nevada, districts are increasingly turning to their support staff members, such as bus drivers, substitute teachers, and cafeteria workers, as possible recruits. That's how Jeanette Sangiorgio, a long-term sub, found a path back to college to become a full-time teacher. In 2022, she got an email from the Clark County School District in Las Vegas inviting her to apply for an apprenticeship program that leads to a virtually no-cost bachelor's degree. It offered a way for Ms. Sangiorgio to finish her education degree, a feat she previously considered impossible for financial reasons. How do you figure out how to go through your practicum and your student teaching, she says. Those are times where you're expected to be in the classroom with no pay. In April, federal, state, and local leaders converged in Ms. Sangiorgio's fourth-grade classroom at Laura Deering Elementary School in Las Vegas to tout the program that landed her here. A few years ago, no states offered registered apprenticeships for teachers. Now, 34 states and Puerto Rico offer such programs, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Nevada is raising the bar on how you grow and support future teachers, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said during his visit with Acting Labor Secretary Julie Hsu. And it's a model I'd like to see in workplaces across the country. The concept reflects a change in the way the education field recruits and retains its workforce, given ongoing struggles. A majority of teachers, 77%, say the job is frequently stressful, and more than half would not advise a young person to enter the profession, according to a recent Pew Research Center report. At the same time, enrollment in college education programs is dropping, forcing school districts and higher education institutions alike to rethink how they recruit. The way we think about college students is changing, says Donica Hayes, dean of the College of Education at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. The student is no longer your 18-year-old. Instead, they're people like Ms. Sangiorgio or her colleagues, Christina Romero and Ebony Rose. All three felt drawn to teaching, but didn't immediately pursue it. The Nevada Forward Initiative, housed within the College of Education at UNLV, offered them a way into the profession. It also helps people with degrees in other fields get licensed to teach. By Nevada law, apprentices operate under a learn and earn model, meaning they cannot pay for tuition and fees. State legislation passed in 2021 and 2023 also allowed student teachers to work as long-term substitutes without any waiting periods. Under those parameters, aspiring teachers accepted into the apprenticeship program pay no tuition and can earn money while working in schools. The two-year program is followed by an additional 2 years of support and professional development. It definitely takes the weight off your shoulders, says Ms. Rose, an apprentice who works as a long-term substitute at Laura Deering Elementary. She co-teaches a third-grade class with Ms. Romero, who is also an apprentice. That's exactly how the program authors envisioned it. The full concierge approach is about saying, your job is to be a student, and we have a team that will take care of the rest, says Kenny Varner, an associate dean for academic programs and initiatives at UNLV's College of Education. That includes registration and course scheduling. The program boasts a nearly 95% graduation rate and currently has 509 registered apprentices across the state, according to data from UNLV. So far, it also has an 85% retention rate within the teaching field among the first two cohorts of students who graduated. Though the bulk of apprentices are in the Las Vegas or Reno areas, 75 live in rural counties, where recruiting can be harder. Dr. Varner says the apprenticeship program stands to create a fully licensed school district staff in tiny Esmeralda County, which counts fewer than 800 residents. Their solution isn't to try to recruit people to come up there, he says. It's to say, we have this talent here. Even amid teacher shortages, it's not just about filling vacancies. The program tends to yield licensed teachers who have ties to the neighborhood schools where they work and who look like the children they serve. So it's boosting teacher diversity and retention efforts, too. Ms. Rose sees the worth of relating to her students. I'm like, hey, everything that you guys are doing right now, I've walked these same streets. I know that same jack-in-the-box on the corner, she says. For me, I'm dedicated to teaching in areas such as these, the lower socioeconomic areas, because this is where I grew up. Ms. Romero, who speaks Spanish, finds pride in breaking down language barriers with students and their parents. A parent whose child has since moved to a higher grade still comes to her with questions. UNLV leaders have started emphasizing these fulfilling aspects of teaching careers as they recruit both adults and high school students. The university is launching a youth apprenticeship program that will give high school students the opportunity to accumulate up to 36 college credit hours and embedded work experiences, usually in the summer, before they graduate. We talk about the value of teaching versus the job of teaching, Dr. Hayes, the dean, says. As for the sustainability of the program, Dr. Hayes says she's optimistic UNLV can continue securing funding. The program was initially funded by federal pandemic aid. Dr. Cardona highlighted $48 million in federal investments toward these types of programs during his stop at Laura Deering Elementary. For Ms. San Giorgio, it was an easy decision to join the program. All she needed was a great work ethic, she says, to get her where she is today, leading a class of enthusiastic fourth graders. I didn't even have to think about a job, she says. It was there. The Explainer, Bakersfield, California. FAFSA rollout stymies students. What happened? Millions of prospective U.S. college students have headed into June scrambling to make decisions about where to attend in the fall, or piecing together their school funding with weeks instead of months to plan. The hang-up? Federal student funding packages, which were supposed to arrive as early as spring, were still trickling in beyond the normal college decision dates. A revamp of the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or FAFSA, that was supposed to make the lengthy process easier, has done the opposite. Delays, technical glitches, and new requirements combined for a frustrating process that experts say has undermined public confidence in access to higher education, and will have serious consequences, they say, for the students who need it most. The FAFSA rollout has been a train wreck, says Robert Kelchin, head of the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. FAFSA funding impacts the entire ecosystem of higher education. This affects students. This affects colleges. It affects the states because they're having to delay their financial aid to students, Professor Kelchin says. What is FAFSA funding and who uses it? The FAFSA program expands access to post-secondary education through a collection of financial tools. Funding is based on need and includes the Pell Grant, which provides up to $7,395 per school year to low-income students. Federal aid also provides work-study programs for students and government-subsidized loans, which have flexible repayment programs based on the student's income, and don't begin until a student is out of school. Federal loans also qualify for federal forgiveness programs, like ones for certain teachers, healthcare professionals, or government employees. A 2020 federal law triggered the new application, which is aimed at streamlining the notoriously complicated aid process and encouraging more students to pursue college. The new form has fewer questions and links directly to the IRS to pull in parents' tax information. For most, the new application is easier to fill out, but the current process has thrown up hurdles to even straightforward applications, and is even trickier for students whose families vary from the two-parent married filing jointly model. How has the new form affected students? Fewer students have applied for aid, which means fewer students will head back to school in the fall, say experts. About 40% of high school seniors had filled out a FAFSA application by May 10th. Last year, it was nearly 60%, according to the National College Attainment Network. Looking at total applicants, the gap is even bigger. On May 7th, the Department of Education reported more than 9 million FAFSA submissions. 3 years ago, it was 18 million. The fact that there are fewer applicants makes sense, says Brendan Williams, a financial aid expert at You Aspire, a nonprofit that works with students from underrepresented communities to access funding for college. With loan debt and the skyrocketing costs of higher education making headlines, students are reluctant to pursue more schooling if the cost is ambiguous. Would you buy a house without knowing the cost of things? Absolutely not. Would you buy a car without knowing the cost? Absolutely not, Mr. Williams says, pointing out that the cost of college can rival that of a home. Students are being asked to make a decision without knowing the cost and choose between options for what, for many students, is a price-driven decision. When did the breakdown start? And what are the deadlines now? Application delays for the 2024-25 school year started last October, when the new FAFSA was supposed to launch. The opening of the online application portal was pushed back to the end of December, and by mid-January was fully open. By late March, more than 1.5 million applications had been processed and relayed to schools. But a number of those had inaccurate aid estimates based on incomplete data. Students seeking help were met with difficult-to-reach customer service. Meanwhile, schools, which use that FAFSA information to determine aid offers, delayed deadlines for students to decide whether to attend. Normally, that deadline is May 1st. At the end of April, most colleges and universities pushed it to May 15th or June 1st. Also, revised formulas mean some students qualify for more funding, and some less. What are the upsides to the new FAFSA? The new form is shorter and less confusing. So once they get everything smoothed out, I do think it will actually be simpler for a student, says Ruthie Wellborn, Assistant Director of Financial Aid at Bakersfield College. A spokesperson for the Department of Education acknowledges the new FAFSA rollout was problematic, but says students shouldn't let that stop them from applying. "We will work to grow your trust," he writes in an email. "Most of all, please encourage your students to fill out the FAFSA, and in so doing, open doors to their dreams." By Ali Martin, staff writer. Points of progress. European Union. the European Union adopted its first law targeting violence against women. The new rules make crimes including female genital mutilation, forced marriages, cyberstalking, and online harassment punishable by a minimum of 1 to 5 years in prison. While countries from Italy to the Netherlands have laws meant to combat gendered violence, the broad directive now requires all 27 member states to bring the EU rules into force within 3 years. The EU estimates that some 600,000 women and girls have experienced genital cutting in the EU, and 10% have faced some form of online harassment since age 15. Countries disagreed on whether the law should include an EU-wide definition of rape, and the law was passed without such a provision. The new law also imposes harsher punishments for offenses against children, spouses of former partners, public figures, journalists, and human rights advocates. Japan. Researchers may have found a way to ramp up green hydrogen production. Hydrogen fuel is considered green when renewable electricity is used to split water into hydrogen and oxygen. When stored in fuel cells, hydrogen can power everything from cars to factories with no greenhouse gas emissions. But scientists have struggled to produce green hydrogen at a scale that can compete with fossil fuels. Typically, iridium is used as a catalyst to split water molecules, but it is also one of the rarest metals. By spreading out iridium atoms on a piece of manganese oxide, one of the most common compounds in Earth's crust, a team in Japan reduced the amount of iridium needed by 95% while maintaining hydrogen production. Other scientists warned last year that care must be taken because excess hydrogen leaked into the atmosphere could increase methane levels. But the lead scientist working on the new catalyst, Ruhai Nakamura, says that the method can be easily transferred to real-world applications, and his team is working with industry partners. Africa. To strengthen the startup pipeline from research to commercialization, the United Nations Development Program is investing $1 billion across Africa in its Timbuktu initiative. At 13 university centers, the program is designed to foster closer ties between African universities and the startup economy. Each Timbuktu Unipod includes a design lab, makerspace, and event area where innovators will have better access to resources and expertise. In Malawi, entrepreneur Sonia Kachali, who co-created a platform to streamline banking among financial institutions, said that Unipods were an answered prayer for innovators looking to build companies that can be used by our people. Unipod hosts include 13 countries, from Rwanda to South Sudan. A separate Timbuktu project will support innovation hubs in 8 cities, including Lagos, Nigeria, and Cape Town, South Africa. That's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from the June 10th issue of the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Tricia Beattie. So long for now.